on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
I think Elvis is the salvation for the United States. And I often say, if you, this country is going through a identity crisis, and people are like, what it is to be an American? What is it to be America? We can look at the founding fathers, but then we got to look at what happened in the 50s.
Yeah.
How did we just come out of this war to this mighty empire that was so technologically advanced and so rich, and the rest of the world didn't have that, didn't enjoy this change? And some have said it could be supernatural, could be UFOs, Nazi technology, you know, the usual suspects, whatever it is. But that's the America we should be looking at, because that's the post-war America, and Elvis symbolizes and represents it. And people say, well, what is it? I said, I thought about saying it, but I don't want to come up with a listicle. We have to find this out together. But I can assure you, it does include inclusivity. It does include being proud of what's around us. It does include being who you are. It doesn't include equality, but it does also include being a rugged individualist. It's all there with Elvis.
Yeah.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, in humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author and podcaster Miguel Connor to discuss his latest book, The Occult Elvis. Miguel delves into the spiritual and mystical aspects of Elvis Presley's life, exploring Elvis's deep engagement with spiritual texts, including Gnostic writings, his healing abilities, his role as a figure deeply intertwined with America's cultural and spiritual life, and the lasting influence of the King of Rock and Roll. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Miguel Connor is a writer, voiceover artist, and host of the popular podcast Aeon Byte Gnostic Radio. His books include Voices of Gnosticism, Stargazer, Heretic, and The Executioner's Daughter. He joins me today to discuss his latest book, The Occult Elvis. Miguel, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Nick.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. As I told you before I hit record, I've been a fan of your podcast for several years now, and I was very interested and excited when I saw in the catalog The Occult Elvis, and I loved the book, and I'm so excited to talk to you about it. Let me ask you first, what got you interested in this? You begin and kind of end the book with a quote from Tarantino's Pulp Fiction that you're either an Elvis person or a Beatles person. And they're not exclusive, but you sort of identified by your own account as a Beatles person, but you ended up writing this book on Elvis. So what led you to this?
Yeah, I am an Elvis person now.
Yeah,
it's true. And for the audience, we should mention that scene where Mia Wallace is filming Vincent Vega, John Travolta, and she does the "Are you an Elvis person, a Beatles person?" It only appeared in the theatrical release of Pulp Fiction. Tarantino, you know how directors are.
Yeah.
In the 90s, there was this whole trope of people using cameras because they were cheaper. So they were appearing in movies, you know, Sex, Lies, and Videotapes, other movies. So he was like, I'm not original anymore, and he took it out. But I do have it on my Substack. You can't find it. You can find it on the internet. But and yeah, even when I watched that scene first time I watched that movie at theatrical release, I always was a Beatles person, and I had no room in my life for Elvis. He never did anything for me. So, but unfortunately, the Archons have a sense of humor. The universe has a sense of irony. And sometimes we are called to be messengers or vessels. There's a saying by Schopenhauer I use a lot these days: a man can do what he will, but he cannot will what he will. There's a cosmic will, and if we listen, and sometimes if we don't listen, then it's very painful. There is a mission for us, and that happened in 2022. A series of sinks, ayahuasca rituals with their own visions, and something came over me in summer of 2022 to the fall to the winter. I couldn't get Elvis out of my head. I could not. And it was,
Wow.
I for 2 months, all I could do was listen to Elvis in the car or on YouTube or Spotify. I dressed up like Elvis in Halloween. I don't dress up for Halloween. I even did a podcast dressed as Elvis. And I know some people were starting to think I was crazy, although some listeners will just shut up and write a book because you won't stop talking about Elvis. And I still didn't know much about Elvis. I'd read one bio. I did one show on him in 2023. Didn't think much of it. It was just assumed, all rock stars and Hollywood people are strange and eccentric. And okay, Elvis and the Beatles and Jimmy Page, they're all doing that. But whatever, it's their music that matters. And suddenly I felt I had to write this book. And on February 2023, I just sat down with one biography. I'd only watched Baz Luhrmann's movie, Elvis, when the visions took over me, and I just sat down and wrote the book. And 3 months later, I had a working draft. I reached out to my friend Mitch Horowitz, who's rightly so claims to be Elvis's number one fan in the world. He loved it immediately, and we connected with the publisher. And a few months later, I had a deal. So it's just, again, it just was meant to happen, and I have no idea. I know you like to say, we like to say, well, am I a vessel? I was talking to Chris Knowles today, and maybe we should call it like quantum entanglement. You become connected with the author or the figure, and it's almost like it's happened beyond time and space because the book does have a lot of present day, present, first person, third person, like reenactments and so forth. So that's in a nutshell how we got to the occult Elvis.
Well, I appreciated it. Well, I will say just from the beginning that, I love the Beatles, but as I've been posting on social media, I know whose mug my coffee is in.
Love it. Love it. So jealous.
I did a trip to Graceland 10 years ago, and I thought I had a photograph of this, and I was checking, and I can't find it anywhere. And I don't remember what it was, but I remember they had a few books on display. And I was surprised at the time by the books because it was something spiritual, if I remember correctly, or what we might kind of identify as New Agey. And I never associated Elvis with that kind of thinking. And that was one of the reasons that I was so excited about your book. And it turns out that you noted that he was like a voracious reader and just read all of these spiritual texts. And I don't know. I mean, yes, there were the gospel albums, but most people, I don't think, consider Elvis a very spiritual person.
Yeah, or they see him more as just a good old Southern Christian boy, which he was, but he was so much more. That was just part of his personality. And he did veer away when he became famous, he was really burned by evangelical Christians because they thought, this stuff is immoral, it's satanic, all that good stuff. And so he kind of backed away from conservative Christianity, and then he met a spiritual teacher who opened new vistas into a more esoteric Christ, the cosmic Christ, the wise teacher Christ, the transcendent Christ. And that's the Christ that he embraced, and the more magical Christianity that he read from Manly P. Hall, the Gospel of Thomas and Theosophy, all those that gave him, again, the Christ that he understood and he could work with. And I'm surprised because I went about what you said about Graceland, because I went to Graceland November of 2023. And I mean, you can see his books on the occult right there. And they're right there. They're signed, they're underlined, everything. In fact, the tour guide, as soon as we started, was like turned around and said, "By the way, Elvis was a really spiritual person." By spiritual, you mean esoteric, the Western esoteric tradition. And of course, where he's buried looks like a Zen garden. There's Buddhist motifs and all that. But which just tell us we see what what we want to see. If I'd
Yeah.
visited Graceland with you 10 years ago, I probably would have missed
Yeah.
all these things. The mind is the great trickster, and when we're not ready to see someone or someone that's been marketed a certain way, we won't see him. But yeah,
Yeah.
Elvis was a voracious reader. He used to have wherever he went, whether it was a Hollywood set or on concert, he had workers bringing about 200 books on the mystic
Yeah.
traditions. He was very involved and very passionate about these things.
Yeah, that surprised me as well when you wrote that he had the people carrying the books around when he was on tour. So, did that surprise you? Especially when I read in your book that he had read like the Gospel of Thomas. And did that surprise you at all that there was a almost like a Gnostic aspect to Elvis?
That didn't, because again, I had done a show on Elvis 10 years ago, but I just like,
Okay.
okay, whatever,
Yeah.
So I'd already known that fact. And so none of it surprised me, except for the depth of what he was, of how much he was into these disciplines and traditions, and how it affected his life and how it expressed in his mystical visions and his healing powers and his telepathy and astral travel. And as I kept going into different biographies, I kept finding new remarks or situations where Elvis was just doing magic. And these are from his
Yeah.
girlfriends, biographies of Priscilla, bodyguards. It was just spread all over. Again, this is not tabloid stuff. Elvis was
Yeah.
the king of the tabloids before there was
Right.
this misinformation on the internet. There was a whole cottage industry of Elvis conspiracies and all that. This was taken from the horse's mouth. This was done in all his supernatural feats were done with witnesses around, including his UFO encounters and all that. So the depth of it. And then as I started, I had first thought, Nick, I was just gonna, so that I could get back my life and be a Beatles person again. I thought, I'm just gonna do like an encyclopedia thing, you know,
Yeah.
40,000 words. And Elvis did this, Elvis did that. And then either publish it or self-publish it. You know, it's one of those things, just get it off my back. But then I started seeing higher level forces in Elvis. And of course, I explained them in the book and from different lenses, from Steiner's view of the world, from Jung, from
Yeah.
alchemy, from Mark Stavish and his ideas of egregores. And I saw this almost cosmic fate, destiny around Elvis that's deeply intertwined with the soul of this country and
Yeah.
perhaps Western culture. So I propose all these theories, and which I think brought the importance of Elvis like many, many levels up, dialed it up to 11.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk to you about because I know that, Elvis is often seen, I mean, he's an icon, right? And a deeply American icon. And you refer to him as being archetypal, but he's also associated with the American dream. And you noted that you didn't think the American dream was archetypal, but that it was this egregore. And I was curious if that also was applicable to Elvis as well, because there seemed to be this kind of energy transference between Elvis and his audience and the nation as a whole. As you mentioned, he was transformative to the American way of life in so many different ways.
Yeah, it's hard to make the argument. Is once you read the book, you're like, okay. And again, it just kind of flowed out of me. But yeah, he was sort of as I call him, the egregore of the American dream, for good or bad, shadow and light. But he was also an expression of the archetype of the trickster. He was the Lord of the Crossroads. When the United States came out of the war, we had a completely different country. The world history had never seen an empire rise like the United States, with advanced technology and incredible amount of money and all. It was a completely different country, and it was quite a psychic shock to the world and to the population. And again, this was a crossroads from this sort of benign republic to this mighty empire in a world full of satellites and nuclear bombs and UFOs and mass media and new inventions every other day. And Elvis was sort of the leader, or the one who led this population to understand their new place in this brave new world. And he was the one that also open the doorways to different spiritual and psychological modalities for the population to be able to grow and cope with this new empire. Elvis, as I write in the book, really woke up the Kundalini in women. Women were transformed and gained so much independence and sovereignty and understood their intelligence and sexuality because of the effect Elvis had on them. Forms like martial arts and Eastern spirituality and black music and European opera and Hispanic tunes, all was through Elvis that it came, and it gave the population a new choice, a new vista on how to deal and how to exist in this empire. So that's, again, it's a short answer, but he was the trickster, the Pied Piper, the egregore that led and represented this new America that we are now, which is now collapsing. So we need Elvis again. We need him more than ever.
Well, and that was something also in conjunction with the question. What I was thinking about was, because I think you noted, this is a direct quote from the book, when you refer to him as America's magician and you say we are in a dangerous time of transition, and Elvis was essential to the previous shift. And like you said, it's like, well, we kind of need an Elvis figure now, it seems, to help us through this. And I can't really think of any that have the same kind of impact currently that Elvis had.
No, I can't either. Obviously, Elvis literally popped out of nowhere. I mean, his story of fame was almost like walking into a record studio, doing a demo. And then within less than a year, he was with Colonel Parker, just conquering the world. But yeah, I don't see that. I'm working on the sequel, which is called The Gnostic David Bowie. David Bowie was certainly Elvis 2.0, and David Bowie also, you might say, saved civilization or the psyche of civilization through his work. But I can't think of an Elvis 3.0. I keep going, well, it could have been Prince, could have been, I don't know. There's no, but if this force or this manifestation, human manifestation, shows up, it'll be fast and it'll be quick.
Well, we definitely need it, I think. I'm also kind of curious. You refer to Elvis as this magician and that he was doing magic, like he was engaged in healing. And I was really surprised to read about these instances of healing. I think there was one that happened in where I am in Colorado, where one of his entourage broke their leg and he healed the leg. How much do you think he was aware of this sort of like magical propensity kind of operating through him? Because he wasn't, I don't think, how some people might think of a magician as, performing various rituals and whatnot. It seemed instead that it was just something that was flowing through him, like you mentioned for yourself, being the vessel.
No, it was very natural to Elvis because keep in mind, he came from a Pentecostal background. And in the book, I show how Pentecostalism is really it's really the beginning of rock music. The idea of being taken over by the Holy Spirit and shaking in the house was called rock and rolling in the 40s. And many critics said that rock music was just a Holy Spirit tent revival with electric guitars. And instead of saying the Holy Spirit, you said baby. So, and of course, in this, and it's very shamanistic. Again, I show scholars have noted that it has all the hallmarks, bells and whistles of a shamanistic mystery religion school, except it's clothed in a Christian motif or Christian mythology. But within Pentecostalism, I can never pronounce it, healing is natural. His parents, when he was very sick as a child, did the whole hands on him and they healed him of a really bad fever. So it was very natural to him. And once he started learning about magic and other traditions, he was off to the races. Again, he could heal headaches, he could heal nausea. He was able to heal a woman of her cancer, like he said, broken legs. It was just a natural part of him. And again, it was very natural for him. And Elvis always, he was very much into Yogananda and Kriya Yoga. And Yogananda always said, the miracles and the magic that you perform just means you're getting closer to to God. In other words, the end is not the fact you're casting spells. It's a sign. And even in the Gospel of John, Jesus doesn't call his miracles miracles, he calls them signs. So Elvis was very humble. It was just part of being a magician or a mystic, and it just meant he was on the right path. It was very simple. That's why he wasn't, he neither hid it nor was public about it. Let's put it that way.
It reminds me of the siddhis in yoga, and that those are not the final goal, and they can actually be traps on the path towards enlightenment. And I found it interesting that so many people, like you said, you found bits and pieces in all these biographies that you were reading, and so the people surrounding Elvis knew about this, but I don't think that the popular culture was quite aware of this aspect of Elvis.
I don't know about the popular culture, but I would say the first respondents, if you would, were. I mean, because he would have meditation circles. He would have circles where he would sit there and read these occult books to fans, family, bodyguards. And he would ask him, what do you think about this concept of enlightenment? And do you believe in reincarnation? He would chat with people in movie sets at Graceland, wherever he was. And just, he loved getting into these conversations. So he was definitely, oh, again, he was neither hiding it nor trying to promote it, but I would say within the inner circle and fans, they were getting some of it. And I would say that, yeah, with he was probably instrumental in the idea of the East and the Western esoteric tradition and other mystical pursuits and really being accepted in the 60s, because again, he was talking to people, producers, all that. And if Elvis did it, then it was cool. So yeah, I would say that it was one of those things that he just did. He was just Elvis. And people say, well, how come we didn't know? Why weren't other people around it more open about it? Because it was just a fraction of his life. When you were within the atmosphere of Elvis, it was a crazy life. There were parties, there were celebrities, he'd get up at 3 in the morning and get in his jet plane so he could fly somewhere to buy a sandwich. It was his life. It was just a big whirlwind of events and crazy happenings and all that. So it's almost like his supernatural stuff was just part of the whole insanity that was being around Elvis.
Yeah, there seems to be. I like that you made so many different parallels. And one, with the mystery traditions, rock and roll in general, I've always seen as being very Dionysian. And you see that with, the screaming women. I watched in preparation for this, I think it was the Ed Sullivan show. And he did, I think one of the songs I watched was Love Me. And it was like he could just move a finger and the women would just start screaming like the Mænads, in the mystery traditions. But there also seems to be this Christ-like aspect, and maybe it's a more of a Gnostic Christ-like aspect, but even with after his death, because there were sightings of Elvis, and I remember these, and I always assumed that all the sightings were like physical, that people were claiming that they physically saw, like a living Elvis. And it is that sort of liminal thing where you can say, well, the living Elvis, it's the living Elvis, what they saw.
Yeah, he definitely has a Christ-like quality to him, and there was times when he made the mistake of early in his career of, taking out his hotel keys and saying, "Who wants it?" And yeah, he almost got torn apart. They had to stop the concert because they were gonna literally eat him alive. So it was definitely that mystery religion, tear your God apart and everything. And he brought so much energy. And that's my point in the book is that rock music was never meant to be a form of entertainment. A huge mistake we've made, or that the powers that be have corrupted. It was always a spiritual modality. And we all know this, Nick. I mean, I don't care whether you're going to watch Taylor Swift or you go to see the Grateful Dead, it doesn't matter, right? You're there because this person, this priest, has awoken something within you that has allowed you to know yourself, that has helped you heal your pain, and you want to commune with others and create this force at these concerts that help your psyche, your soul, and give you a sense of purpose and a form of ecstasy. So that's what rock music is, and Elvis certainly really was the pioneer in this. He was a First and foremost, he was a priest, a shaman, and every concert to him was essential to connect with his fans, whether they're men, women, Vegas, the Houston Astrodome. It didn't matter. It was a way of connecting, and he used to talk about, "I can feel the electricity of people." And again, we're talking about the egregore, this power. And there are instances of people being, well, certainly mentally healed and saving their lives in these concerts. So it was, to Elvis, it was everything. And he has that rare, probably only reputation. Every concert he ever performed in, regardless of how small or big, he sold out. I think he did like 3,000. And that's pretty impressive. Where he was, it was a full house.
Yeah, it seems like we've lost something really profound with the kind of corporate takeover of music and rock music. And I think it wasn't exclusive to Elvis. He opened the door, of course, but like you mentioned, the Grateful Dead, I think that people had sort of ecstatic experiences there. Bowie and Prince. Prince is number two on my list with Elvis. And maybe that's what we need. Maybe what we need now is a new ecstasy to get us out of the problems that we're in.
Yeah, definitely. It would definitely help. I mean, I haven't been to a concert in so long. I think the last concert I went to was 2017, Willie Nelson in Austin. It was awesome. I was like, now you hear people's music and you're like, yeah, it's okay, but you see them in concert, you're like, now I understand why you're so amazing, because I feel, oh. So I don't know if those days are over or we need a new medium. Again, we don't want to be like poo-pooing different mediums, because you and I believe in non-locality, and the power, these powers don't need distance and all that. So I don't have an answer. I really don't have an answer right now. Again, I'm trying to get through Elvis and then through Bowie, and we'll see what comes up.
Yeah. Well, and Elvis is connected to media in so many ways, I think, because he emerged at the beginning of sort of the where more and more people were having televisions in their homes. So I don't know that we can divorce him from the medium. And Bowie, I don't know, Bowie may be somewhat similar.
Yeah, I mean, Bowie was, of course, very smart. He knew, the multimedia route was the way to go. So he tried and did everything at all times. But Elvis really, he really exploited. Again, we came out into this new world with mass media and television. The transistor radio was finally invented by the Japanese, which revolutionized how we listen. Electronics in general, the jukebox was in every restaurant and every store, and the radio was ubiquitous, and Elvis and Colonel Parker just completely exploited it. They knew it, and that's the advantage. As I quote somebody, you had somebody, let's say, like James Dean, who had that power, but you had to go buy tickets and go see a James Dean movie. With Elvis, he could beam himself into your living room and appear every week. And he had such charisma, such power, and such magic that he could just take over the family. And these people in those days were teenagers. As I write, the word teenager did not exist until the 50s. It was, you were just a kid, and then suddenly, whoop, go get married, go get a job. But that was life. And when
Yeah.
you were a kid, you didn't exist. Suddenly in Eisenhower's America, you had these guilty parents because of World War II and the Depression, and they had all this money, and they started doting on their kids, and these kids became teenagers, and they became very rebellious, they were very curious, very demanding. The girls were like, I see how my men look at women. I want to look at men that way. I want to objectify men. And
Yeah.
Elvis came in and answered all those questions and gave these teenagers this power, this independence to seek, to explore, to, push the line, go over the edge. And yeah, that was part of the Elvis magic, is he could be everywhere and really just created an entire class, subclass, and really influenced a generation, inspired, made people alive and wanting to seek better things out there than, the middle America answers.
Yeah, it gives me a new perspective on my parents in many ways because my parents, they were from the 50s. That was, they were teenagers then. And my dad, I think, had every single Elvis album from all the movies. And I always kind of I was thinking, because I've been listening to Elvis again, that, my mom would be so proud of me now that I'm listening to Elvis. But I always saw them as kind of like middle of the road. They never got into the Beatles or anything like that. But yet it still opened some doors in so many different ways, I think, and affected them and affected me too. I remember crying the day that Elvis died. And I was just a kid, but I loved Elvis when I was a kid. So yeah, I don't know what kind of question I'm trying to get at with that, but I'm just kind of reflecting on what
Reminisce and reminisce and But yeah, there is a magic about his songs, and people say, well, he didn't write any songs. Well, first of all, he lived in a time where, this was before Bob Dylan and Paul McCartney. It was like you played the bass, you produced, you sang, you wrote this. I mean, there was a system in the 50s where you did things, and singers didn't write their own songs. Their producer would hand them a song or pick one. And with Elvis, it didn't matter. He had a way of making everything its own and putting that shamanistic, mystical touch to it. So whatever he sang, you can feel it. And he would pick songs that he could feel the pain of the artist. That's why he loved the blues and gospel so much, because he could feel, as he said, the pain of the slave and the blacks being homeless in this country. And he said, there was nothing like that, and I want to express that to the world. Or he would redid like Italian opera. Whatever he did, he could just make it his own and really emit this Elvis power that no one has been able to match.
One of the things that I was commenting in discussions with friends, because I've been kind of posting that we are going to be talking, and I've just been so excited about your book and kind of sharing details. And on one of the messages, I sort of ended because a friend was like, well, I liked the music, but the person, and I'm like, he was human like the rest of us. He had his shadow. He was just human. And then I just followed it with, I think, because there does seem to be something almost otherworldly about Elvis. You start the book with the scene of his birth and his father, Vernon, reporting this blue light kind of surrounding the house.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was what Jung said. The bigger the light, the longer the shadow an individual casts. You'll see that historically, and everything casts a shadow. We all have our dark side. Certainly Elvis did. He could be downright scary and dangerous, but he was also just the most charitable and beautiful soul. I write many instances of things he did selfishly to for other people, and he viewed everybody equally. As Gladys always told him, we're all equal under the eyes of God, and he believed it. He didn't believe in case or somebody being superior because of their financial or social status. He was a kindest person too. But yeah, blue light, that's how it began. I mean, the other theme of the book is the idea of fate. Can we overcome fate? Should we overcome fate? Bringing in, I mentioned the Schopenhauer quote, but Jung said, free will is doing exactly what you're supposed to do right now. Unfortunately for our egos, that means what our soul, what the gods, what higher forces have in store for us. And it's not always a happy ending, but hey, the hero's journey is the hero's journey. Self-knowledge is might be the only gift you get, and it's probably the best gift you'll ever have. And that includes Elvis. He certainly learned so much about himself and his destiny, but from the get-go, it seemed he had no choice with that story where they had to have the birth in their little house in Tupelo, Mississippi. And because they couldn't afford a hospital or a doctor, so they had midwives. Some stories say there wasn't even a midwife. And it was a cold winter night, and his father, Vernon, went outside for a cigarette. And suddenly, this blue light flooded the area, and everything was frozen. You can hear the coyotes or the rustling of the wind. And Vernon freaked out and just ran inside, scared for his life. And when he went in, somehow, whatever these forces were, he forgot. And the main reason he probably forgot is that Elvis's older twin, Jesse, was born dead, and huge shock. And they had to wait an arduous 35 minutes for Elvis to come out, and Elvis came out alive. But that was from the moment, it seems fate was sealed, because as psychology has learned, the twins are connected, but there is such a phenomenon as a twinless survivor. And that is one who loses the twin at birth, and they lived in a very haunted existence, an existence full of guilt, an existence where they seek the bigger questions of life or make contact with God to understand, like, why him? Why not me? And these figures are they're seekers, they're workaholics, but they also tend to be very self-destructive and prone to addictions. And there are other examples. The main one I give is Philip K. Dick. He and Philip K. Dick almost had the same personality, same view of religion, same journey, and unfortunately, same sort of self-destructive attitude that they had. And it all goes down. They couldn't understand why they lost their twin. And their twins also became their advisors, their daemons, if you would, as they call them in Hellenistic tradition. And Jesse would appear in Elvis's dreams and in visions and guide him through life, just as Jane also appeared to Dick and throughout his life. So, and there's other things I talk about why Elvis was, I don't know, doomed, fated, poverty, death of his mother, and a few other things where it just the abuse of his mother and other things where by the time he was famous, it's almost like both his good and bad destinies were sealed.
I was going to mention Jesse and the Daimon, and I found it really interesting the Philip K. Dick parallels. And I just before I go on, I just wanted to say that that was seems to me another sort of parallel between Elvis and the birth of Jesus is the light. I mean, with Jesus, it's a star, but with Elvis, you have the blue light. But one of the things to kind of go back, you mentioned is that he is an example of the wounded healer. And I think that's really clear because there's so much, and you mentioned, like the archon of poverty that sort of influenced him throughout his life and, the death of his twin, the early death of his mother. And it seems to me that that self-destructive aspect is part of it's the wound overcoming the healer.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Again, as research has shown us, poverty is traumatic. People don't heal from coming out of poverty. It's epigenetic. Generations who live in poverty have more mental and physical diseases. And it's just a horrible thing. And Elvis, obviously, in the South, Great Depression. It was like North Korea. North Korea probably had a better standard of living, as somebody, and in Tupelo, East Tupelo, somebody said he was born on the wrong side of the tracks. It was forgotten. I mean, we're talking in India, they would have been the lowest case, along with, unfortunately, back then, blacks and Southern Jews. I mean, it was the untouchables, and it was certainly destructive to Elvis's psyche. But again, there's the light side. It gave him this drive. I want to do something for my family, for my mother, so we don't have to, skip dinners, or some dinners have like cornbread and water, or lose our house, or something like that. And it certainly really drove, it really informed Elvis. What was the question? I'm already thinking about poverty. I'm feeling sad.
Oh, yeah, I was just talking about the self-destructive aspect and the wounded healer that
Oh, yes. Let
that's
me get to the wounded healer. The wounded healer, yes, all this really trauma that he was never able to heal from. Again, the loss of Jesse, the obsession of his mother with him, which became abusive, the poverty and other things definitely shaped him. It wounded him forever. And I talk about the concept about how the best healer is the one who is already broken. And this is traditional in shamanism. Who do the shamans are usually individuals who have had trauma, near-death experience, or something life-altering that opens the channels of communication to the spirit world, but also provides them with a beautiful sense of empathy where I am in pain and I don't want to heal others, but then they start believing, probably rightly, that I can heal you. Because I am in pain. It's my pain that allows these forces to come through me, and that's how I can help others. And again, this is a traditional shamanistic feature, if you would. And I go even further to show that in circumpolar traditions, the shaman who's already wounded, he is eventually, because of the weight of using these forces and helping others, and unfortunately not dealing with their own inner wounds because they feel if I am healed, I can't heal anybody. They become drug addicts, overweight, broken down figures, like on the road. But the tribe's like, hey man, you signed up for this, thanks. And the shaman is like, I know, so I'm fine. I'll die like Elvis died. And that's how it becomes. And we see that in rock music. I mean, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, these figures are broken, yet they somehow provide us, we see ourselves in them, but they somehow provide the magic or the gnosis to help heal ourselves. David Bowie was a classic one. He was a very broken person who always spoke to the outsider, to the person in pain, to the outcast. And say Elvis was exactly the same way too. So yeah, the wounded healer is certainly an important concept, as is the shaman. Of course, I also call him America's shaman because he was. The shaman is the spiritual troubleshooter of the tribe. He's the one that brings both psychic, physical, and soul healing. He's the one that goes into the spirit world and brings back the tools so that the tribe can negotiate the wilderness. And that's exactly what Elvis did.
Yeah, as you're talking and having the book in my mind, one of the things that is kind of occurring to me is his birth in Memphis and the things
Tupelo.
that, well, okay, Tupelo.
Do they
So he ended
yeah,
up
he.
in, yes, thank you. Yeah. He ended up in Memphis, though. And the connection with Memphis, what I'm kind of thinking here is at the time that he emerges, he is embodying music from African American culture. And as you noted, he didn't judge people. He was very open and giving. And the other main site in Memphis for me, in addition to Graceland, was the Civil Rights Museum. And so it seems to me that not only was there something with the figure of Elvis, and I don't know if I'm making sense, but it seems like there's something that's, any kind of archetype, there's always something beyond that. But it seems like that there was a healing aspect to the racial divide in our culture that Elvis was kind of embodying.
Yeah, he certainly blurred the lines. I mean, he did it. He did in what the 40s date a black girl. He was always going to Beale Street and dressing up as the latest blues and jazz African American style, which of course got him in trouble. People threw stuff at him and called him an N lover and all that, the usual stuff. But he didn't care because, again, he was dipping into these animistic powers from the blues. He was the trickster devil. And again, black gospel music. He found that there was a beautiful story. And again, a wounded healing stories of a whole people. So he was very much into that and he didn't care. And eventually it turned into rock music and a whole generation wanted some of that. And he was part of those shamans like Little Richard and Johnny Cash and Jerry Lee Lewis. There were more preachers than they were musicians, if you would. And it goes back to the crossroads because even then, Memphis, people used to say, was that place where the South and the North met. And it was that place where black and white music were connecting. And even the name is. People, you wonder how come in Tennessee every city and town is named either after a Civil War hero or a native person or story or that. Why? Who called it this Egyptian name? And the word Memphis, I think, comes from the Egyptian Al-Tawan, which means the city overlooking two places. So the crossroad force is always there where Elvis was going. And again, it was this, yeah, I mean, race issues, gender issues, technology, spirituality, all that, this huge pivot. And Elvis was right there, as I call him, the Lord of the Crossroads. That's where the trickster is. That's where the shaman is. That's where the devil is, but so is Prometheus. And buyer beware, go at your own risk. But the Nephilim have good gifts. Just make sure they don't burn you.
Well, and it's I'm curious, I mentioned, my parents loved Elvis, and Elvis was a presence in my life when I was really young, but now he is, I mean, he's still there in the popular imagination. There was a recent movie on Elvis. You can go to Vegas. I remember once I was in Vegas and I was in an elevator with three Elvis impersonators. So it's still there. But I'm curious about what you think the relevance of Elvis moving forward. I don't know how, like, generations younger than me and you are relating to Elvis. It seems like there's a timeless element to him, but also, is Elvis going to slip, kind of in the, sort of a forgotten part of the American dream? When we wake up, our dreams always are, very fragile things. They don't last for long.
Good point, but I think he's just as popular as ever. When I'm looking at record sales and all that, and there's still a lot of Elvis sightings. You can go to the Graceland webpage and they have a page dedicated to Elvis sightings. I mean, let's put it this way, and this is kind of tongue in cheek, but when you are appearing to human beings, it means you're pretty popular. And Elvis is appearing as much as Jesus, the Virgin Mary, Bigfoot, and UFOs. That's quite a pantheon to be part of. That means you're in with the God's crowd, if you know what I mean, or the occult crowd. You are there, and no other rock star or celebrity comes close to the Elvis sightings, and he still appears to people in dreams. People are emailing me all the time. My God, I just had an Elvis dream and he helped me. He's there to help. He is the Lord of the Crossroads. He's waiting to help you. So I think his popularity is just resurging. And I'm glad to be part of it. There are other books. We forget that beyond the Baz Luhrmann movie, Sofia Coppola put out a movie on Priscilla based on her biography. So it's there, and there's 10 minutes of Elvis with his occult books preaching, and he's becoming so spiritual he won't be intimate with Priscilla and all that. So you got that. She covers that, and it's based on Priscilla's biography. So that's also when people, because this is the internet, so they'll be like, well, what about Elvis's grooming? I said, read her book. Priscilla lays it all down about the relationship. If you think there was grooming after you read Priscilla's book or watched her movie, I don't know what to tell you. So it's all there. But I think Elvis is the salvation for the United States. And I often say, if you this country is going through a identity crisis, and people are like, what it is to be an American? What is it to be America? We can look at the founding fathers, but then we got to look at what happened in the 50s. How did we just come out of this war to this mighty empire that was so technologically advanced and so rich, and the rest of the world didn't have that, didn't enjoy this change. And some have said it's could be supernatural, could be UFOs, Nazi technology, the usual suspects, whatever it is. But that's the America we should be looking at, because that's the post-war America, and Elvis symbolizes and represents it. And people say, well, what is it? I said, I thought about saying it, but I don't want to come up with a listicle. We have to find this out together. But I can assure you, it does include inclusivity. It does include being proud of what's around us. It does include being who you are. It does include equality, but it does also include being a rugged individualist. It's all there with Elvis. So I think that's what we need to get back to.
And from a religious perspective, I think it's the experiential aspect that is so important, because after World War II, I know that religion got co-opted a bit, and that it was, to be Christian is to be patriotic, to show that we were not godless communists. But it was also co-opted by people to try to dismantle the New Deal. And it seems
Yeah,
like
you're
that
right.
seems like more
Christianity used to
ideological.
be anti-government. You're right. Yeah, that's always going to happen. As I say, anything that can be weaponized will be weaponized, and
Oh, sure.
somebody's going to find a way to weaponize it. Or so that's just normal. But yeah.
What was, I know we're running out of time here, but what was the most surprising thing that you learned about Elvis in writing this book?
He was a blonde. That's always freaks people out. They just can't
Oh.
believe. Again, we have this trope in our head, and the idea that he was a natural blonde and that he dyed his hair throughout his life might surprise people.
I didn't know that.
There's so much that I think it's remarkable. Again, his parallels with Philip K. Dick, who's another figure who's really essential to our modern culture, our modern art. He's really influenced, whether you're watching Severance or any sort of multiverse movies, extremely influential. So their parallels were eerie, and I come down with about 15 parallels. That'll surprise people, what this schlock sci-fi writer and the king of rock and roll, no, very similar figures. That was surprising. Part of the shaman aspect, which I love, is the fact that he was, like any shaman, obsessed with death and birth. That's exactly what a shaman does. Shamans help deliver children, they give the rites, they sometimes take voyages with the dead to the spirit world. And Elvis was that way. He loved going to cemeteries and hanging out. He loved going to morgues and looking at bodies. He was once part of the embalming process of a friend, and he knew everything. And he said, well, that's kind of creepy. No, again, that's the idea of death and life, understanding that they're inseparable. And he always wanted to, we may find this strange, but he wanted to see a baby being born. But for a male in the 60s and 70s, not going to happen. Only the doctor would get that. And at one time, he was at the hospital to visit a friend of a friend's baby. And of course, he shows up at the hospital, and nurses are like dropping people. And doctor, you know what I mean? Wherever he went, he caused this huge stir. And he's up in the one of the hallways, and somebody's pushing this pregnant woman, and she seems to be in pain. And I was like, oh, let me help you, mama. And he puts his hands on her and starts doing his prayer, and suddenly her pain went away, and she's like, oh, thank you, Elvis. And then, of course, he's like, can I go in and watch this baby be born? Of course, the nurses are like, of course. But the doctor's like, sorry, sir, you can't be here. And the woman was like, come on, come on. So I thought that was funny. He didn't get to see a life being born, which, again, today might be very strange, very, but Again, this is back in the 50s. So there is so much about Elvis, which is, I mean, so many strange, funny anecdotes. Like one that made me laugh is when he thought somebody had stolen from him. Actually, somebody did steal from him. And they went to the Vegas, I think it was the Vegas airport, and they're looking at the airport. And somebody says, he's in the plane, but the plane is taxiing on the runway. And Elvis just runs out
Oh,
and like waves the pilot down. And the pilot's like, oh my God, it's Elvis, and stops the plane.
yeah.
Elvis gets on the plane, doesn't find the guy, and then leaves. And I was like, only Elvis could get away with that. I mean, imagine doing that, how it would appear on social media if, I don't know, some celebrity went today, Tom Cruise. It doesn't matter who
Yeah.
went and stopped the plane. Beyond being crucified on social media, they would have been arrested. Even pre-9/11, nobody would dare
Yeah.
stop a plane in the middle of a runway except Elvis. He could get away. He wanted to visit Nixon. He shows up at the White House. A few hours later, he's got a Nixon lets him in the White House. So he defied time and space and every sort of norm over and over again, which is mind-boggling, even beyond all this craziness with his weather manipulation, healing, telepathy, astral travel, all the crazy magic stuff. He really defied time and space. He really was a magician, America's magician.
Well, wasn't it in one of the post? I don't remember if it was a dream, but I think it was a dream where someone, like in a dream state or something, it was after his death that he did actually observe a birth.
Yeah, I think so. God, I have a few examples of it. There's many examples of it, but he appeared, he appeared in dreams, he appeared to people, he appeared to save people's lives in a few times, and sometimes just to be a good old Southern boy. There was that time where, for some reason, I find it touching, he appeared. There was a farmer who almost lost his farm, and Elvis, one time just bought him the biggest tractor, the latest and greatest. Just he used to do that. You're in trouble, he'd buy your house, he'd buy your whatever you wanted. So he bought this farmer a tractor, and the farmer's out working, and Elvis just appears, and the farmer's like, well, what are you doing here? And I was like, I just came to say goodbye. And the farmer turns around, and his wife's running out of the house screaming, Elvis just died. And he turned around, and Elvis was gone. He's just to say goodbye. Or if people had issues, unsolved issues, Elvis was always there.
And there's also, I think, partly the he feeds into conspiracies too, because there's always a conspiracy that he had faked his death. When I started looking at Elvis videos, something came up, and I forget the person's name, but he's a pastor,
Oh, yeah.
and actually he looks like, if Elvis
Does.
were alive, he looks kind of like what Elvis would look like. And I thought after reading your book, I'm like, well, if Elvis did fake his death, that's the one thing I could see him doing is being a pastor somewhere.
Yeah, I do go through many theories. I don't do that one, but there's so many. I mean, people have written entire thick books, and there's documentaries. It's so I go through some of it, but ultimately I think he left the building, or at least his physical form left the building, although he's still around. But as somebody astutely told me the other day, if Elvis loved his family, there's no way in hell he would leave Lisa Marie and Vernon. It's just not how he was. He would rather, there was no way he was going to go under, witness protection or any without his daughter and his dad and his grandmother. So just it's not something he'd ever done, and he didn't. He would have never done it, and he wasn't afraid of death. He knew his time was coming, and it was time to transition, if you would.
And I think that maybe one of the reasons that there are these ideas that he maybe faked his death is the sightings, especially I remember when they would be in the news and not just, on the front page of the National Enquirer. You would see these like NBC News that people were maybe confused, not recognizing that these were like astral Elvis.
There's so many. I go through a lot of them in the book. Some are very touching, save lives, but There are countless, and they're still happening. So
Yeah.
as Elvis has been busy, again, along with Jesus,
Yeah.
Bigfoot, the Virgin
Yep.
Mary, and the aliens,
Yeah.
he's been very busy on planet Earth.
Yeah, taking care of business.
Yeah, there you go.
so I know we're at the end here, but let me ask you, you've already mentioned the Bowie book that you're working on. Is there anything else other than that and keeping up with the podcast?
No, God, that's it. That's enough. I
Oh,
thought,
yeah.
I really
Funny.
thought after the Elvis book, this is my 15 minutes of biographer fame. I can move on to
Yeah.
something else. And then suddenly the voices came in my head again. Again, I couldn't will what I wanted to will. And it kept saying, you forgot about Elvis 2.0, David Bowie. And suddenly, same process. And now I knew more about Bowie than
Yeah.
Elvis. So now I've got the first draft, and again, it's been an incredible adventure. There's a David Bowie people have probably missed, and his connection to Elvis is so eerie, it's not even funny, both on an archetypal, a personal, historical level. So
Wow.
that's God, I hope I can get out of this. I hope there's no Elvis 3.0 because I want to work on other things.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, where can people go to find out more about you, the podcast? Where are you on social media?
Well, for just me, just tell them miguelconnor.com. I just
Okay.
opened up the site to deal with Elvis, Bowie, my new podcast on called Gen X Wasteland, where I talk more about rock music and pop
Okay.
culture, and I can promote Elvis, Bowie, and whatever grunge band I feel like that week. So miguelconnor.com, it's got links to my Substack, social media, all that good stuff. And but if you want to learn more about Gnosticism, Hermeticism, and the occult, go to thegodabovegod.com, and that's where my podcast is. Also, social media, books, and all that good stuff. Yeah, miguelconnor.com. Obviously, you can
Yeah.
order the book there or go to your usual suspects, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all that.
Yeah, I usually put a link from the publisher and bookshop.org. I try not to promote Amazon too much. Jeff Bezos is already richer than he needs to be. So,
Yeah, and I
but
make same amount of money, so that's fine.
yeah. Well, I appreciate everything that you've done. I love the book and I love the podcast. I have long been very deeply interested in the Gnostics and having a background in religious studies. That's what led me to your podcast initially. So I was really interested to see how Gnosticism also played a role in the occult Elvis, too. I was wondering how you were going to do that.
It just, yeah, I mean, Elvis, as we just spoke, he read the Gospel of Thomas,
Yeah.
was familiar with the Nag Hammadi library, whatever was there.
Right.
He had read the Dead Sea Scrolls. He'd read, yeah, so much of both ancient and earth, and again, New Age Christianity, for
Yeah.
lack of better words. And of course, that ties very much into Gnosticism, the idea that we all have an inner Christ or a divine spark. The world
Yeah.
is probably some sort of illusion that we can pierce, all the stuff about Christ consciousness, which obviously the Gnostics were promoting 2,000 years
Yeah.
ago, and the idea that perhaps there are some very powerful evil entities controlling us, as I show the mis his mystic experience with Stalin in the sky mocking
Oh,
him,
yeah.
shows that, and some of his other philosophies that he saw.
Well, Miguel, thank you so much for your time today. It was really an honor to be able to speak with you, and I cannot recommend your book enough. I absolutely adored it. It was very well written, and it was a fun read. It was probably one of the most fun reads I've had in a couple of years.
Oh, thank you very, thank you. Thank you very much. No matter
Yeah.
how many times do they say I'm not going to do it, I can't help it. The egregore
Oh,
comes
yeah.
over me. Yeah. Well, glad you enjoyed it. It was a great read. My publisher and editors were excellent. Again, a lot of people like Ronnie Pontiac and
Oh,
Mitch
yeah.
Horowitz and other people took a look at the first draft, Jeff Kripal, and they really helped out, add this and that. So I'm very grateful for all their help.
Yeah, that's a great team to have.
No, that is the team.
That is jealous, very, very jealous. All right,
Well, when
well.
they all like Elvis, it's easy.
Oh,
You can't say no.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I could trust anyone who doesn't really like Elvis.
Yeah,
You know?
no, you're an Elvis person.
Yeah. So, all right, well, Miguel, I will let you get on with your day. And again, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you. And that's a wrap on episode 194 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe to the channel and click that notification bell. You can also follow Rebel Spirit Radio on whatever audio platform you use for listening to podcasts. Right now, I'm nearing 20,000 downloads on the audio platforms, yet I only have 12 followers, and one of those is me. It only takes a second to like, follow, or subscribe, and it's totally free, and it really does help. Putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I put a lot of effort and time into each episode, and I hope you can find it in your heart to send a little love my way. With more subscriptions and followers, it could possibly get some sponsorship, and honestly, having some funds come my way to help with equipment, hosting, and other necessary subscriptions would be really helpful. You can also help by joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rebelspirit. The link is also in the episode description. You can also buy a super thanks on YouTube to help support my work. As I always say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, consciousness, the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.